Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. I'm joined by the big guy.
That's me.
Sasquatch, the Yeti. 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspections, Certified Master Inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on Home and Garden Television and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 855-765-1045. Toll free from anywhere in the world, including the International Space Station. Yep. Those guys have head-of-the-line privileges. That number, once again, 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, thank you so much for being here solo last week. I was at the University of Indiana.
Nice up there this time.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It was a little warm by their standards, but drier than here.
Yes.
But it was the Best Buddies National Leadership Conference up there with 2,300 of my good buddies having some fun and learning some things of how to do better things in the community for people with intellectual and other disabilities.
Great.
So it's great. So thank you very much. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. The whole campus at the University of Indiana, and you would love this, hand-cut stone.
Yes.
And virtually all the roofs.
Limestone, slate. Limestone, all the, lot of limestone
just
in Indiana.
Just gorgeous.
Right. Yes.
You know, some of the buildings up there are 150 years old of massive stone. And then the slate roofs.
Made to last.
And not a wiggle in a ridge line. You look across those roofs, and they're big buildings.
Yeah.
They're straight. There's not a sag. There's not a wrinkle. There's not a wiggle.
Right.
They're gorgeous.
Right.
Tell you another interesting thing. Virtually no caulking.
No caulking.
No caulking. If you go back 100 years ago, 150 years ago, we didn't have silicon caulk. We didn't have anything like
right.
that.
Right. They used glazing.
Well, a little bit in the windows, but most things were flashed with copper so that you shed water. And the way they sloped the windowsills, which were stone, were sloped away. Right. So everything was intended to shed
water. Right.
And it ends up lasting 150 years.
Yeah.
It looks gorgeous.
Right. Yeah, they didn't have all those technical, they had to figure it out.
Man. Yeah, and the copper flashings and the copper gutters, and it wasn't little. Thin copper. I mean, this stuff was as thick as a penny.
Really?
Gorgeous stuff. And it gets that beautiful green patina.
Oh, yeah.
It just looks so rich and so wonderful. It was a gorgeous campus.
God, the cost of building that today would be phenomenal.
Yeah, it would. And I'm sure the majority of the
even
skills
even to find somebody who's skilled to do it. You know, you can find someone to do it.
You would think in one sense, with more modern machinery, we could mine that stone more cost effectively and place it and whatnot, but apparently not.
Yeah, masonry work is expensive.
Love that place.
You gotta have, be really, really trained. Well, there's been a crime spree. I was reading in the newspaper.
Who was stealing what?
They were stealing hydrangea blooms. You know what I mean?
So, here locally or elsewhere?
In Boston, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah, reported to the police.
It was Is it as article. Intense as the tulip scandal in Holland in the 1600s?
Yes, yes, the Gracious. Tulip scandal. So, you know, if you're missing any, hydrangea blooms on your hydrangeas, you know, reports to the police department, you know. But, you know, bamboo, you know, is always a great landscape plant. We had some people calling about bamboo. And, you know, bamboo has 1,450 species. And, you know, it's a great, easy landscape plant and very easy to take care of. And it creates that beautiful screen.
I like it.
And some other varieties people call me, ask me for it. What kind of black bamboo is there out there? Because bamboo, there's one Demercalis Laco, which is a bamboo. If you live in a microclimate that's in a warmer area, you can get the, you can grow the black bamboo, and that's the Demercalis Laco. And it's a very, very beautiful bamboo. The culms or the branches are will eventually turn black. Gets around 30 to 40 feet and doesn't run. This is the type that doesn't run. There's Phyllostachys niger, which is a running type.
Yep.
But, you know, that will take over. It's a very slow growing initially, and then it will you know.
In terms of vertical growth, do the clumpers grow faster than the runners?
I think what it is that the clumpers establish themselves more quickly. As far as that, and I'd say you would be probably be growing faster.
Yeah.
Well, the rhizome types are slower to establish themselves, but once they get established, they're off and running. You know, you can also, you know, this is a great look. I went to one of our local gardens in Gainesville, and they had a bamboo forest. They had made out of a black bamboo, and it was a running type.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to remove, you know, have a garden room, so to speak, and you wanted to remove a large portion of your grass, you could plant the running type, and it would actually create that forest look.
How do you control it, though?
It's easy to control running bamboo, fairly easy. Most people don't really.
You dig a deep barrier in the ground?
You could do that, but just kicking the culm as it emerges in the ground from the ground in the fall, you just kick it.
Okay.
And it stops growing. That just stops. Because it's grass. Basically, bamboo is grass.
And then does it try to push out in another direction?
Yeah, we'll try to push out in another direction in the next fall. And then when you see it emerge, just kick it.
So in a reasonably small space that we would typically have in a backyard, 10 by 10, 20 by 20, probably better off go with the clumpers to control?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But if you wanted to have that garden room, you could plant that black bamboo and let it run and fill in. And then eventually just remove all the grass. Create that Japanese garden or the Asian garden look. I didn't realize that when I was reading about the types of bamboo that they actually use bamboo as a rebar in concrete. Yeah, it's amazing. It has it's I think it's around
many places in Asia where the not only bamboo but also look like straw.
It has a higher tensile strength than steel, three times higher.
Really?
Yeah, tensile strength in steel, which is amazing.
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah. It's 28,000 PSI, 28,000. Tensile strength.
Well, what about over time? It's embedded in, with moisture. It doesn't deteriorate?
Doesn't deteriorate. So
I'll be darned.
They actually, produces 35% more oxygen than a woodland forest, hardwood forest. You know, so it's in a pretty amazing plant. You know, history was built around bamboo because bamboo will flower about every 70 years.
You know, bamboo would be great to use by the Department of Transportation in the medians between the roads.
Yeah.
Get a dense bamboo forest in there.
You wouldn't be crossing those.
No, but if you crashed into it, it's reasonably absorbing of the energy.
That's kind of a good idea.
You mentioned it sucks up all the exhaust and conversion to
and it's tough
oxygen.
Plant. Yeah.
It's fast growing. Requires zero care.
Right, zero care.
Instead, we plant those stupid palm trees.
Yeah, that might be, as if someone from the DOT is listening, that might be, and it's cheaper.
It's cheaper, it's faster, it's better.
Like, Those Canary Island dates are $25,000 a piece.
It's dense so that you don't have the pet, the light penetrating.
If you run into it, it's not killing anybody.
Right, and you yank that car out and it grows right back in the
Right, exactly. Okay, the DOT's got the
new. I think I'm on to something.
Yeah, yeah. But get back to the black bamboo. It's Demichelis Laco. But if you want something with that, now, there's, in my opinion, the nicest bamboo is the ones with that, you know, if you like that Asian look, is the ones with the huge culm. You know, the culm is the stalk, 8 inches in diameter.
Wow.
10 inches in diameter. Lactiflorus, Demichelis lactiflorus can get up to 9 inches in diameter and 100 feet.
Well, you better like that plant, because if you put that baby in your yard, it's yes. going to take something
it's
significant
like
to make it go away.
You're planting a live oak. Uh-huh. But when you walk, I've had Hawaiian Parker Giant. I planted Hawaiian Parker Giant at landscapes. And it's when you walk up to it, everybody is stopping to look at it because it's pretty arresting. You know, I have planted in the front yard of a landscape. We planted a Japanese garden. We planted a Hawaiian Parker Giant. And a lady said everybody was driving up to look, you know, stopped. What is that? You know,
right.
And it, you know, creates the shade of an oak tree. So the Hawaiian Parker Giant, Demichelis, Lactiflorus.
I like that idea you shared, a month or three ago.
Yeah.
About... to get a quiet room in your yard that's small,
right.
you make a circle 10, 12 feet across, whatever size you want. You line it in bamboo, leave yourself a little entry point.
Right.
And that baby within a year, year and a half is going to be tall
right.
and dense.
Absolutely.
You get in that room, no one can see you, so you got that privacy. It's quiet and sound absorbing.
Right.
And when there's a gentle breeze, you have that rustling of it.
There's your staycation.
Absolutely.
Point.
You could even put a fire pit in the center of that, go right up.
Put a fire pit. One of the things we do is we make a small pond. You know, we can put a small pond. And if you want to do the maintenance on a small pond, that's great.
Exactly what went through my mind, a pond, something else to maintain.
But if you don't want to do that, you could just make a gravel pit. You know, like, you know, the Japanese garden, they use sand to or gravel.
So
to
it looks like a dry lake bed.
Right. Well, it looks like to illustrate water.
Bed.
And then put a couple boulders in there. Then you could put a waterproof music system out there.
Yeah.
And then outdoor lighting on the bamboo. And
yeah,
you've got
a dry creek bed.
Right.
And then pump in a little music to hear it sound so it sounds like a babbling brook.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you maybe even...
By the end of the first bottle of wine, you wouldn't know the difference.
You'd wake up the next morning in the chair, you know, still sleeping, you know.
Yeah.
Man, it was so comfortable, yeah.
What about bugs? So if I build this thing, I got this circle of bamboo, I'm in there, I'm in my zone, I'm feeling great.
You could set up a misting system.
Well, I wasn't sure if the bamboo attracts skeeters and other bugs or if it tends to repel them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know that, but, now that you mention it, I really not, when I've walked through a lot of bamboo plantings, I never really noticed that many mosquitoes as a matter of fact.
That'd be easy, that small area, to just go in there and mist it, just with
mist
a pump
it.
Sprayer.
You can set up, you can pump it up.
What are they called? Not pycnogenals. What's that word I'm looking for?
Pyrenthium.
Pyrenthium.
Yeah. Pyrenthium. And just spray that area. Or you can have an automatic misting system. You got your staycation right there. You know, you can even put a barbecue or outdoor kitchen there.
I could put one chicken in there.
Remember those little small barbecues you used to make?
Hibachi.
Hibachis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little tiny little
things.
They
were the trend.
They were the trend. You know, out
70s.
Your patio. Yeah. They were a little cheap, you know, a little cast iron. You could use that out there. But bamboo, gravel. A couple boulders, if you wanted a pond, that'd be great. And you have your own, your landscape, easy to maintain, a lot of visual impact, you know, definitely.
Privacy, I love the privacy.
Privacy and shade. Okay, you're going to have a shade.
Yeah, once you get above 10, 12 feet, you will have shade.
Yeah, in a bamboo forest, even over deciduous hardwood forest, it's normally going to be about 15 degrees cooler. Bamboo has a great way to... cool down things.
Well, you have more surface area, more density than you would in a singular
tree. So, you know, the bamboo is the fastest growing plant in the world. In 24 hours.
24 hours.
1 meter.
Really?
Of growth.
That's something. It's 620 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. And for our friends who are listening on the live stream on Facebook, we're working on the sound. Technology. We'll be right back. Joe from Larry's Garden. Enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. Should you need a large landscaper during the week, easy to find all the time online, larrysgarden.com. Got the blog video frequently asked questions, as well as 2,000 active bloggers enjoying the day, exchanging plant and seed ideas. Holy smoly. Also landscape and hardscape.
Yep.
Larry also has a phone number. That phone number is 346-1970. If you're outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, like Palm Coast or Kingsland, 346-1970. Me, Wally Conway, easy to find all the time online. Go HomePro.com. Home inspections, commercial building inspections, environmental sampling, and the 18-month home warranty. Friends don't let friends buy 12-month warranties. That website is GoHomePro.com, and the phone number 268-8211. Palm Coast and other places in their hinterlands, 904-268-8211. Let's welcome Linda to the home, or Lisa rather, to the Home and Garden Show. Lisa, welcome to the Home and Garden Show. Let's try that again, Lisa. Lisa, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi,
good morning.
Lisa. How can we help, ma'am?
Hey, I have a question. I was listening to you on my way into work today, and you're talking about the bamboo, the black bamboo in particular.
Yes.
I'm curious as to know if that's spreading or is it a clumping bamboo?
It's a Demercalis is a clumper type.
Okay. Good.
Vaco, but you good, have so. To be in a, you know, it's only good cold, tolerant down around 27, 28 degrees. So, but you have to be, you know, if you lived on the west side or the north side, we can get to 20 degrees, it would get some damage. But, you can plant, the Phyllostachys niger, which is another, black bamboo, but it's the running kind. You have to put a barrier around that or kick the combs, but it is a very beautiful plant. I mean, it's pretty spectacular.
Okay. Well, what we're looking to try and do maybe is something a little different with our neighbors is to, instead of a privacy fence, something along the lines of a bamboo.
I love that.
What part of town do you live in, ma'am?
I'm in the Argyle area.
The black may be a little, you know, right now in the last 5 years, you never have a problem with, but you know, you have those surprise winters. You can use, Taxilis gracilis, which is another bamboo, is a non-clumping, but it would form an impenetrable barrier. You know, you couldn't walk through it. You can leave a little spacing there between it if you wanted to walk through it, but it would actually form an impenetrable barrier.
Okay, what's that called again?
Bambusa taxilis gracilis.
Gracilis.
That sounds graceful cool. Bamboo. It's a weaver's bamboo is another common name, but you'd have an impenetrable barrier probably getting, it depends on how close you plant them, in maybe 3 years. You know, I mean, which is incredible. And you'd have, you'd be completely invisible to the other side.
Right. Okay. And do you have any idea how tall that gets?
Around 20 feet. Heck yeah, I do. I've only been
playing. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
So much. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Lisa.
You're
have a great day. Improving Argyle, one backyard at a time. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. The Home and Garden Show, 6:36 here at News 104.5. Wally Conway, that's me from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. The only thing missing, you. 855-765-1045. If you're calling from the International Space Station, you will get immediate head-of-the-line privileges. And if you're calling from the online live stream at Home Pro Inspections, where you can see the video as well as watch the audio, we'll bump you right to the head of the line there, too, because I'll see your smiling face.
Yes.
And respond to it. Out to Middleburg, checking on with Jim's got some thoughts on home improvement contractors. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I appreciate your time and effort to put all the good information out you guys do.
Thank you. We enjoy it. Thank you so much. What's up with you?
I got a couple, two-part, I guess, questions. I'm looking at backfilling a driveway in with some fill dirt, something just to bring it up to level before I do anything else with it, the asphalt or whatever. And I was just curious if I need to be aware of any kind of, you know, getting the dirt from anywhere as far as bugs, nematodes, anything like that in it. You know, is it recommended? No,
not necessarily. Do you have a lot of oak trees around or trees in your
Yes, we do have oak trees and pine trees, yes.
Yeah, well, if you have trees around your driveway, and if you got extra, since you're doing all this prep work, I would suggest you get some gravel and backfill with gravel because, you know, when I, it was like 10, 15 years ago, I went to they have this thing at the University of Florida where you can come and you have these, you go to their trial gardens and then it's a continuing education for horticulture. But what they had demonstrated, you know, a way to protect walkways and municipalities from tree damage. And they had shown where, that they placing gravel bed underneath the driveway around 4 to 6 inches deep, that the tree's roots would not grow into that zone because they didn't like it. So they grow down and then go up around that zone and then move back up. And I had noticed it too when I was digging around, you know, in gravel areas that the, you know, there's really not many tree roots. And then as soon as I hit that dirt area, then it would, there would be a lot of density of tree roots. So, if you're going to take the time and you want to do, you know, prevent a driveway from lifting, I would get some coarse crushcrete or 57 gravel and put that in around 6 inches and then pour your concrete, you know, directly on top of that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, instead of bringing it up level with the dirt, then just do it that way.
Yeah,
okay.
if you want to do an extra step to prevent tree damage, that would be
sure,
and it creates a more solid surface too.
Very good, I appreciate it. The second part of my question is, I have almost a 30-year-old, you know, wood frame T111 siding house. I'm looking at doing some interior repairs to it. I was just wondering if, you know, upgrades, tile, carpeting, if there's an online reference that you guys use for looking for qualified contractors, or, you know, where I can get a good quality job for a reasonable price and check on the, you know, the obviously the confidence of the people that comes in to do the job.
But yeah, there are lots of those. Angie's List, Home Advisor, Porch. There's probably six or eight of them that are very, very common. I'm not a fan of any of them, to be very honest. They I just don't like it. The very best referrals you're going to get. We have a trusted contractor list on our website at gohomepro.com. It can answer a lot of those, many that, you know, we just don't have a vendor for. But the very best is from, you know, friends, neighbors, and coworkers who've done similar jobs at the price point you like, where you can go out and look at their home and whatnot. My gripe with the online stuff is it kind of gravitates to the lowest common denominator. I'm just not a fan of it, so.
Okay, very good.
But there are many of them, and there's other people that really like that. And one of the things you can do with those online portals is pick one, you know, whichever one you guess, Home Advisor, Porch, Angie's List, and let two or three people come out, listen to their shtick, and get an idea, and at least you'll know what those dialogues look like to help you make a better decision. But
now, how about the big box stores that offer, you know, contractors that do the job for you and all that stuff? Is that
again,
you need to research stuff?
It just so much depends on what your expectation is. On a dollar for dollar position, it's not that bad an idea. No one has ever accused any of the big boxes of delivering the highest quality in town.
You say you have a list on your website though for
depending on how specific you need the contractor.
Okay, very good.
All right.
I appreciate both you guys' time, and go Nate. Thank you.
Go Nate. Yeah, good. Yeah, that was a winner on that one, wasn't it?
Yeah,
finding great help is a challenging thing. We work hard to try to set up those referral positions. The challenge we have at HomePro is our business area is so vast in terms of the geography. We're down below Palm Coast all the way up into Georgia and whatnot. And then your blend on that, we're looking at homes sometimes well under $100,000. We're also looking at homes at $2, $3, $5, and $6 million. And when you blend the geography and then you blend the budgets, we'd need to have 20 flooring or 30 flooring recommendations. It gets very difficult.
Right.
To get the right person in there, which is why that friends, favorite, neighbors, and families tend to be the pretty good choice. The license.
Thank you, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks,
Jim. The licensing position on that is really a challenge, too, you know. If you're doing electrical work, you're doing roofing work, anything that's in the license trades, you want to be sure you did license verification and permits. When you get into flooring and painting and some of those other things, there is no license protection. So there's no screen for it. I understand it's tough, and I'm going through it myself right now. You know, we're getting ready to do flooring. We're doing a kitchen. We're doing basically a gut rehab that will begin in another 2 weeks on the condo we bought. And I'm up against the same things. I guess the advantage I have, I know a lot more people, and I ask pretty good questions. But it's still a challenge. It truly is. We're just looking at flooring. My God, we must have looked
at it. There's so many different kinds.
Yep, different brands and different installers, and the install makes such a big difference. If I get fortunate and I make the very finest choice imaginable, whatever that would be, in flooring and the wrong person installs it, then I'm an unhappy guy. I'm almost better off with a crappy product that's perfectly installed than the other way around. So I'm very...
Preparation's everything.
Preparation is everything, yeah.
Hey, you can't believe, what's the tallest tree?
Sequoia.
Yeah, but what is the height?
Oh, how tall?
Yeah,
But 400 feet?
You got it, almost 379 feet.
Pretty good, huh?
It took climbers 2 days to get to the top. You know, they actually slept in the tree when they're measuring one of these trees.
Why did it take 2 days to climb 400 feet? I should have sent some Navy SEALs out there.
Right, 400 feet is a pretty, you got to go around the branches. You know, there's a lot of things you got to do to go up that high. 400 feet. That's pretty phenomenal. It's a high.
How did they do that? They do that with ropes or spikes or?
I don't know if they spiked it, but they rope. You know, like a regular climbing unit. They have some type of. I'm not sure exactly the mechanism.
That would be interesting. You know how like the guys.
They're so huge.
Yeah, you can't put a rope around.
You can't put a rope around.
In a practical sense.
Right.
I can't believe they'd spike a 400-year-old tree.
Right. I don't think they'd do that. Maybe they just climbed it and like roped up. Threw a rope around one branch, pulled up.
A bow and arrow, launch a line up there. Maybe they had spidey powers.
It's amazing. You see a photo of the tree, and it's well above every other tree. And because it was when they deforested that area, they took down those redwoods. The only ones they got now are the young trees.
Mm-hmm.
And this tree is, you know, just stories and stories, you know, hundreds of feet above the normal canopy.
I would imagine on some days it's above the cloud cover.
Yes, absolutely.
Fat, like Jack and the Beanstalk.
The largest tree by volume, though, goes to a cypress, the Montezuma cypress, the Mexican cypress. 400
cubic feet?
No, pounds.
Pounds is not volume, dude.
Pounds
is weight.
Weight. It's right there. Shoot, I didn't write it down right, but it's millions.
It's a really big tree.
It's millions of pounds. I think it was 4,000 million or something. I can't believe 4,000.
4,000 million, it would be 4 billion.
4 billion, yeah. I don't know. I wrote it down.
Every time you have a degree in science from U.S. Naval Academy.
I must have been somewhere between going to sleep and reading this stuff, you know what I mean? But it's one of the largest trees in the world as far as the weight.
Where is it located?
It's in, I think, in Mexico City. Mexico City.
Huh.
Mexico City, yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It didn't get torn down, being a city that old and that dense.
It's got a trunk on it. The trunk is three times the size of a redwood.
Wow.
Three times the size.
That's something that's 30, 40 feet across.
Oh, easy. It's easy. You can drive a car, you know, through these things. You know, it's amazing size. Some of these larger trees, and one of the largest palm trees is found in Colombia. It's around 200 feet plus.
A palm tree.
200 feet plus. You know, how do you get up there to prune that thing?
I was just going to ask if it's still bearing coconuts, and if the coconuts get larger as the tree gets taller.
I mean, maximum velocity hits you in the head, you know, you'd be dead. You know,
does it bear coconuts?
I didn't check on that one. I had to check on that one. Just, but it's a kind of amazing thing. But we were doing some maintenance projects, you know, masonry. When people have flagstone, it's becoming a little less popular because of the expense.
Sure.
And you need someone who's really skilled on it. But if you have damaged masonry, let's say if you have it on your driveway and it's clipped off and you have an underlayment of concrete where someone's gone over the edge and broken that masonry small piece, and you recovered it and you want to try to figure out how to get it back in there, you know. You know, I had a client who wanted me to fix some of his masonry things, and he thought, well, just mortar it back in. Mortaring back in will not work because it's small and there's not any lateral support. So if you what you do on these masonry bricks or anything like that where it's broken off on the edge, mortaring back in, it's going to happen again.
You got to chip it out?
You got to chip it out, and you get masonry adhesive. There's this Italian company, I forgot the brand, I was going to look it up.
Maypie?
Maybe. But it's a masonry cement, but that stuff is so strong. We use it to, when we make segmental blocks, when we need to, I set a block in place, I said, well, I need to fix that. It was like a couple hours or 3 hours. We couldn't get the thing apart. And also, when we did finally fracture one of them, the actual concrete fractured before the glue fractured. So when you put it in place, you don't use it to fill the gap. So you just put a little on the bottom, press it in place, level it out. There's some time. It doesn't set up immediately. Level it out. And then after it sets up for maybe 3 or 4 days, then you can come back and put your mortar in there. But it's impossible to fix a small little stones or bricks that are broken off. There's no support in them anymore. The same thing with the brick. If you have a brick on a porch that's fractured or a portion of it came off and you want to put it back in there, masonry adhesive works very well.
Yeah.
And get the just a general cleanup, and you should last indefinitely.
In the boat world, the adhesive that beats all others is a 3M mix, a product called 5200. And it is the adhesive to end all adhesives. Once you use that, it's
never coming apart.
Well, it comes apart, but how it comes apart is like if you use it on a vertical stanchion that's on a deck, what you need to do is break it off.
Break it off.
So the adhesive bond will never break.
The adhesive bond never breaks.
You break essentially the substrate that you're adhered
to. Right, right. The adhesive bond never breaks. Same thing with this masonry. The adhesive bond never breaks. It's not like mortar, you know. So if you got those little issues on the stonework and on brickwork where you want to fix it, you try to fix it, and you don't know quite how to get it to here. The masonry adhesive is a great product.
Well, the other thing is, if you use mortar, that dimension, the thickness of the mortar, will preclude you from having it be flush again.
Right, right. You can get the masonry adhesive down pretty thin, as far as even on a brick, if you spread it out really, make sure of course it's going to be very dry, so you can't use it on moist material, but get it spread out real thin, you're good.
I love it. It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. And a reminder, head of the line privileges for the International Space Station. Oh, I like this bump.
What? Oh, yeah?
It's a little Billy Joel.
Uh-huh.
6:55 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. I'm here with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. And a man who's struggling with mosquitoes is Ray. Ray, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hey, yeah, I've got a couple outbuildings up on blocks, and I know it gets puddled underneath, and I don't have a chance to drain them out. I mean, in the old days, I used to throw bleach on it, but I don't know if that's good for mosquitoes or what.
No, I will kill them for sure. But, you know, pushing dirt underneath there and try to get that thing filled up, you know what I mean? Are they small buildings?
No, they're small enough if I get off my butt and do that, yeah. But the critters come and dig holes under it anyhow, so I have to keep filling it in. But temporarily, would bleach be sufficient?
Yeah, bleach kills mosquitoes.
Why not pyrethrins? Would that be a little better?
You pour pyrethrins in this. This bleach is cheaper.
Bleach is cheaper?
Yeah, cheaper.
All right.
A whole lot cheaper.
Salt. Salt would work.
If I put my rain barrels, is that bad to put on the plants?
Bleaching water, yeah.
No, 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 from water from his rain.
Oh,
barrel.
No, no, that's no. Perfect. Actually, the water from the rain is better for your rainwater is better for your plants than tap water, because in rainwater there's dissolved nitrogen. It's nitrogen. It has some nitrogen in it. So,
what would I put in on the rain barrels to keep the mosquitoes out, other than keep dumping them?
Put a.
You can get those mosquito dunks.
Put a screen over the top.
Yeah, mosquito. There's a mosquito dunks too. You can buy these things that are non-toxic. You put them in bird baths, and you can buy them at Home Depot or Lowe's or local garden center. They put them in bird baths.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Guys, have a blessed weekend.
Bye-bye. Thank you. A beautiful day. Yeah, I would just put the screen over the rain barrel.
Yeah, that's you put it easy. Just a nylon screen and a little piece of
maybe an old pair of pantyhose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you got any laying around.
A little larger unit.
That wasn't good. That wasn't good. The other thing on the water that's ponding under the sheds there, rather than fill it, which can be time-consuming, if you can just trench it so it flows out.
Yeah.
So if you stop it from one side, reduce the flow from one end, and get it to drain out the other.
That sounds good, but normally that sounds like it's a lower position, so it's,
if it's too low,
it's already, you're probably higher everywhere else around it.
The shed in the wrong spot.
Yeah, the shed's in the wrong spot. Or you can just get one of those little ball jacks and jack the thing up at 2 points and just, so you can get in there easily and just,
push. Yeah, jack it up.
Yeah, jack it up. They're not heavy. The ball jack, get a little piece of concrete.
Or if you got a buddy with a bobcat, just lift the whole thing.
That'll take care of the problem.
It's 8:59 here at News 104.5. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you. Loving hearing from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning, 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m. right here at News 104.5. WOKV, the show features Larry O'Neill.
Yep.
From Larry's Garden and me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. The role and goal of the show is this. Larry spent 20 plus years toiling in the soil. I've spent 20 plus years crawling in attics and crawl spaces, and we share the ideas that we've come across during the course of the week. And the fun part is hearing from you. Your calls, your questions, your ideas, your comment, or just saying hello. The number to do so is 855-765-1045. And a reminder, if you're calling from the International Space Station, you immediately get head-of-the-line privileges. Heading down to Green Cove, there's a man there with a little bit of problem or a thought on crepe myrtles named Charlie. Charlie, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Good morning. Thank you, guys. Let me ask you a question, sure. Larry, here. We got some, I think I talked to you about this, not much the same thing, but we talked to you about some concern with crepe myrtle. But incidentally, they kind of are dying out now, and they were all bright red. They're a dwarf, about 6-7 feet tall, beautiful, but they are turning, as the leaves, they are turning kind of a pink now. Why is that?
The leaves or the flowers?
The flowers.
Oh, they're just getting sun bleached.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Just getting sun bleached. So just a lot of times when you have those really bright colors, and the sun just bleaches the color right out of them.
And another thing I noticed, quite a few of them, I potted some of them.
Yes.
Now the seeds are producing little plants underneath there. Now, that could go ahead and plant those in a pot. Will they be there just like the parent flowers?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what type of hybrid it is. Hybrids do not produce viable seed. They're sterile seed. I'd have to look at it to see what it was, F1, F2, F3 hybrid, what kind it is.
Okay, now, when you say that, now let me ask you if you, that it will produce now, because I put some in the pot here about a couple months ago, and they have grown. They're about 6-7 inches, and they're beautiful growing.
Yes.
Will they'll grow up to make, or you know.
They're going
to
make a crepe myrtle, some type of crepe myrtle. A lot of times they'll revert back to the parentage, you know, some of the parentage. Some other type of variation of that, or they'll be the exact same thing you got that you're growing right now. The same color and everything will be the same.
Oh, it's a possibility.
Yes, there is a possibility. I just don't know. Is it Dynamite you have or Red Rocket? Which one variety do you have?
Oh, Larry, you shouldn't ask me that question.
Okay, it's like asking me something.
Nice do-over.
But you know what? I finally found someone who spells worse than me. And that would be Wally.
Thank you. But I tell you what, I'm going to put some in the pot anywhere and get them all started up there. And I have some there. I just want to know, I don't want to plant them in the same area there if they're not going to produce.
Yeah, well, I would put them in containers. And then
that's what I'm doing, yeah.
They'll flower in about maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, okay, Larry.
Thank you, then.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie. Good day to you. All right.
Charlie is quite a crepe myrtle connoisseur. He really enjoys this crepe myrtle.
I think that.
He calls all the time.
You said something I hadn't heard before about the varietals and the heritage of the crepe myrtle. It could be F1, F3, F5. What does that F thing mean?
It's the crosses, what kind of cross it was made on there to help identify whether it's a sterile cross. Or where, you know, it identifies the type of crop.
And is that protocol or nomenclature?
Yes.
Is that used in areas other than crepe
myrtles? Yeah, everything.
Everything.
Yeah, used in everything. Yeah.
1 through 5.
Yeah.
One would mean you probably can.
Yes. Yeah. The higher up the thing, the less probability that you're gonna get a viable.
You're gonna be F1 through F5 on the sterility chart.
Right. Then a lot of plants are clonal. Like you take. You know, they can't be, they don't produce of, let's say if I grew a plant, it's really a good, great plant. It's a vegetable crop or ornamental tree, and it doesn't produce seed. But I want to maintain.
Doesn't produce any seed or doesn't produce a viable seed?
It doesn't produce seed or doesn't produce any viable seed or a small amount of seed.
Could be either or, okay.
Yeah, it could be either or those seeds. But how do I get those? And I'll have to do that with a tissue culture or taking a cutting or from that or doing a scion, a budwood. So a lot of.
What is a scion?
You know, it's a budwood, taking a cutting and putting it on another tree. Like redbud, you can't grow a redbud from a cutting. You know, they won't root. So if I had a redbud and I really liked that tree and I found it in nature and it was some genetic mutation that was really desirable, then I would take a cutting and attach it to a redbud rootstock.
I got it.
And then that's how they do that.
Is a scion and a graft similar? Or
yes. It's just another word
just
for
it. It's the same thing, just different term.
Yeah, budwood. Yeah, so, you know, a lot of some of those, like, lavender twist redbud, you know, those weeping redbuds, they're all done from a graft. They're grafted to the rootstock because of those issues, you know. So, you know, they're all different kinds of things. We get around it. Horticulture gets around that issue many times. But, you know, some things like seed, or we do tissue culture. That's another thing you could do is tissue culture. That's why orchids are so cheap. You know, orchids used to be super expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you bought an orchid, that was a big investment. You know, what did the orchids cost when we were younger? They were about they were a little bit more than what they're paid now. I think they were just.
I know we never had one in my house growing up. They were too expensive.
They were too expensive. So, but now with tissue culture, where they just take tissue that's not designated or whatever, say, the word slips my mind. I'm having an early morning moment this morning, but the tissue is non-specific. that's not, you know, started to produce any type of like a poor leaf portion or a rootstock portion, but non-specific.
Almost like stem cells in a person.
Right, exactly. And then they take that and put it in a petri dish, and you get all these little plantlets, and boom, you get to have 1,000 orchids from one little tissue culture. You know, and that's how they do it to be make it cost effective.
I like orchids. Yes. I like orchids a lot.
You know, if you, we had a lot, some more questions about Japanese maples than people have been talking about lately. But some of the heat tolerant Japanese maples, people struggled to figure out which ones grow well in our, and had a lot of failures with Japanese maples in our area because it's hot here, 105 degrees. You know, it's pretty hot, high humidity, and which types are, can grow well is a little bit difficult to discover. But Chinzo improved is one of the best ones. We also have Inabana Shadara, which is a beautiful weeping Japanese maple. If you like those weepers that don't get really tall, it has that burgundy foliage and the dissected leaf. What that dissected leaf is means a really like a fine filament, really narrow branching on the leaf. But Tamukiyama is like a purple, beautiful, beautiful Japanese maple. Another great one would be Glowing Embers. If you want one green, a green Japanese maple has nice, beautiful color in the spring, nice, beautiful color in the fall. You know, that's a great one. Shishigashira is another small, unusual leaf. Kind of a contorted leaf. It can just take the full sun. Actually, these right here are we going to be planted in the full sun, and don't need a shade. The Emperor One is another one. It's a very slow growing. So here's some Japanese maples right there. They can take our heat. Need, you know, some decent irrigation. You know, and if you can give them some afternoon shade, they'll appreciate that. But many of these can be grown in the full sun. Most species greens can be grown in the full sun, but they do appreciate a little bit of afternoon shade. They'll start to get a little bit of fungus on the leaves in the late in the fall. But if the color, if the temperature is right, you'll even get a little bit of fall color. So in that bamboo garden, you know, or that you can include a Japanese maple. Some of those, you know, one Japanese maple. If you make your gravel
break bed. Up all the green with that red color.
Yeah, that red
looks
color.
Looks good.
Absolutely. Put some of the Japanese ferns in there, and then you'll have a great landscape. Very simple to maintain, but plus a classic plant. You know, the more people want to get that plant, but you know they struggle to get one that is you know going to be reliable for them.
Reliable in what sense?
That they just don't like the heat, and they actually peter out and die. You know, I've had a try many of them over a period of time to see which ones would live. And what I normally do is I'd buy maple whips or two or three branch trees from Oregon, and they ship them to me in the winter, and I put them in containers, and I'll see which ones will.
That's got to be a heck of a culture shock to go from Oregon to California.
Yeah, well, they rip them out of the ground.
The humidity, the temperature.
Well, it's in the winter, and they acclimate to it, but you can immediately tell, you know, by July, which ones are going to live in our temperature.
Yeah, the dead ones aren't going to live.
They're by August, they're dead, you know, but for sure. But the ones that can tolerate the heat, they're vigorous and look good, and you're amazed at the difference. They all have basically the same genetic material. They're not subspecies or anything, but just like human beings, you know, there's slight variation and their ability to handle the heat.
Sure.
And
what about if you have a high filtered light, like say in my yard where
any Japanese maple would grow in your yard,
just to keep that direct sun from pounding down.
Yeah, and
pretty heat,
even you could even get some of the heat sensitive ones to probably grow in your yard because you know your yard's
it's cooler. Yeah.
And you got a lot of shade going on there, and they're an understory tree.
What if you got a Japanese maple, and then beneath it, you got some ferns, so it's aspirating and cooling from below?
Japanese maples and Japanese, they have Japanese ferns that are very beautiful in color.
But the fern would assist the The Japanese maple.
No,
in
not
cooling?
Necessarily. No.
The ground doesn't get hot.
Yeah, I think it's the shade of the other trees.
Okay.
The shade of the other trees, keeping the leaves moist, you know, the moisture density, all that other stuff.
Someone should make, and maybe they do, a sunscreen for plants.
They do. When we ship Japanese maples from, let's say, in the middle of summer, we're digging a large Japanese maple, they spray the leaves with to keep it from water from evaporating from it.
Is it like a wax?
It is. It's not a wax because it comes off.
So it's stopping evaporation or aspiration. It's not stopping the sun.
Anti-respirant or something, they call it. But
that's strictly for shipping, though.
No, you can put it on leaves in a hot day.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
720 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break, gentlemen. Right back to the phones at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 726 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. And a gentleman who'd like to speak about one of my favorite subjects from New Smyrna Beach is Roger, thinking about attic fans. Welcome, Roger.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Happy to hear from you. Love New Smyrna.
Thank you. I've heard positive things and not so positive things about attic fans, and I was curious what your opinion is.
The positive things is if you buy one and install one, the guy that installed it, that you purchased it from, will make some money. The negative thing is the attic fan typically overpowers the attic, so that the cooling of the attic is the result of sucking air-conditioned air out of your living space. So absolutely, positively, the attic fan will cool your attic. That will have some impact on comfort if you're not presently comfortable. You know, if your house, you have trouble getting it cool. If the goal is to reduce your total electric bill, it is unlikely to do so.
Okay.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate.
Okay? Go right ahead.
All right. If you have the intake hole is greater.
If you have proper ventilation.
It can be calculated correctly.
If you have proper ventilation. You won't need the attic fan.
Right. Well, that's your point.
Yeah.
But yeah. If you wanted to drop it down another 10 or 15 degrees, you the attic fan, and if it's properly calculated.
Maybe.
Okay. I just want to give the guy.
There are scenarios where
I've read it myself.
But often than not, it's not a positive.
So you got to have the perfect calculation.
Yeah,
you know, of the venting.
Yeah,
right.
That's really what I read, was that it could suck air conditioning out of your house. So that's why I've stayed away from it. So
yeah, me personally, I wouldn't bother with it. But some scenarios, it can be a small advantage, and it goes back to what you're attempting to accomplish. So you're looking to cool the attic. Okay, that's a good thing, but. Is it because of an electric bill? You know, you're trying to drive down your cost, or are you attempting to improve comfort inside the living area where you're having trouble cooling?
Yeah. Really just trying to figure out if I needed to cool the attic down a little bit, and would that have any effect on the house? The house is just a year old, so built under current, you know, building code. So it's probably insulated as well as the builder could get away with. So
sure. Now, if I was spending a little bit of money and you want to improve the insulation, that's never a bad idea. There's no downside to that.
That might be a better idea there. It's just increase the insulation beyond what the minimum is.
Well, the radiant barrier
would be another reasonable idea, a spray-on radiant barrier. The nice thing about improving the insulation is it works in the winter as well as in the summer. You have the benefit there. It's a passive item that is always of use and value. And the attic fan is only of value in the summertime.
Okay. Right. You helped me very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a beautiful day.
Yeah, I will.
I just never get excited about attic fans.
Yeah, well, we could tell.
And the funniest ones of all are the solar-powered attic fans.
Yes.
So if you wanted to produce some solar electric, there is an optimal place to place that solar panel. If you want an attic fan, there's an optimal place to place that attic fan. And the way God looks down on this is, They're never the same place. So you sub-optimize the performance of one for the benefit of the other. 7:30 here at News 104.5 WOKV. We've got Fox News traffic weather. And when we come back, we'll be talking new home inspections for a new build with Mark and Fernandina. That'll be exciting. Stay with us. Right back. 7:36 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. You need Larry? Larry'sGarden.com. Home inspections, you need Home Pro? Go HomePro.com. All righty, thinking about home inspection. Heading up to Fernandina, checking in with Mark, talking about home inspections for new buildings. Welcome, Mark.
Houston, I have a problem.
What is that problem, Mark? Perhaps we can help.
All right. I'm buying a new home. It's already completed. It's got the carpet. Everything's already in there. Do I need a home inspection?
Yes. Here's why.
Before you sign the contract, yeah.
So I want you to imagine this. Imagine that you're buying a brand new Lexus, beautiful top of the line Lexus. You call the Lexus dealer. They drive to your driveway, and they bring a truck. And in that truck are all the parts to build your beautiful Lexus, and they dump it in the dirt, and then a bunch of guys show up to assemble your Lexus. That's essentially what we're doing in a new home build. So in spite of the best intentions of the builder and the best intentions of the people building it, sometimes there's things that aren't quite all the way right. And here's the goal of the home inspector, specifically Home Pro Inspections I can speak to. The goal is to inspect the home such that there are no callbacks the first year you own the home. When you discover things one by one by one in your home that need a little tweak, you call the builder's warranty department. They come out and fix them. That's very expensive for the builder. It's very time-consuming for you, the individual. So the idea is to working together between the home inspection company, you, and the builder, say, what can we discover prior to closing that can be fixed prior to closing so that you can live happily ever after? So that's the why, and that's the goal. We do hundreds and hundreds of those every year. We have a gentleman, Brad Rushing, one of our inspectors, lives right there in Fernandina.
Okay.
And here's the website. You ready? Go HomePro.com.
Okay.
You want to find out if there's anything wrong with that unit before you sign on the dotted line.
Yeah. And the hope is there's nothing wrong. You know, it's not.
Right. They're going to be more motivated to fix it before you agree to it than it is.
It's true.
Yeah.
And they would rather have 3, 4, 5, 7 little things or even big things to solve at one time.
Right.
That's the benefit to the builder. It's just so expensive to.
Right. Run back and forth, run back and forth, run back and forth.
Yep. The other time that we'll be with you again, Mark, is when the house is about 11 months old, we'll come and look again to determine, is there anything that you need to have corrected before your one-year warranty expires? Because once that baby expires, you're pretty much on your own.
Yes.
Okay. Here's the phone number also. Yep, 268-8211. And as I say, you can peek on the website, too, give you some more insight and ideas at GoHomePro.com. Appreciate you, Mark. Looking forward to serving you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Bye, sir. I have been educating myself more and more and more since we have our ready source of great information on water, Mark Kinder at Affordable Water. The website's Affordable Water Jacks. And we've been digging deep. He has the knowledge. I've been digging deep into his brain to understand more about chlorine in water. So in a well system, you don't have any chlorine. Right. So there's no need to consider removing it. There's no issue of the potential health. There's no issue of the taste. But for the vast majority of people, which I will be in another couple of months, who have JEA or other municipal water supply, there's chlorine in the water. Now, we need to have chlorine in the municipal water supply because they're traveling the distance and all these things that could occur, bacteria in the water. So it is the right thing to have chlorine or another disinfectant in water. It should be there. The question is, how much should be there and what do we got to do to remove it? So the range of parts per million of chlorine in municipal water is between 0.2 parts per million and 4. What we typically see in the greater Jacksonville and the surrounding areas is somewhere between 0.2 and 2.5. Mm-hmm. The more chlorine, the more impact it could potentially have on you, whether that's taste or a health or other related issue. Now, it's deemed to be safe.
Right.
That said, there are various experiments and agents who believe it's unsafe to have the chlorine in the water. Why put it in there? So the question is, how do you take it out? The easy way to take it out is with filtration, carbon filtration. It's easy and inexpensive to add the that system, carbon filtration, right with the water softening. So they can do that all at the same
time. Easy maintenance, too.
Easy maintenance. One of the things that, this really bugs me, but the documents are there that says water filtration, water treatment systems tend to be sold, not diagnosed and prescribed. So people end up buying a lot of things they don't particularly need. And a piece of that is it's a continual changing of the filter. Unless you've got something really crazy going on, that carbon filter really only needs to be changed once or maybe twice a year. It's not something that needs to be done monthly. And there are companies that will attempt to put you on a regular schedule of monthly or quarterly or really frequent changes of the filter cartridge that doesn't need to be changed. So you got to watch out for that. So if you'd like to get that water, first and foremost, diagnose. You need to have a diagnostics. What is my hardness? And you measure that to be sure you're less than 1 grain if you want soft water. What is the content of the chlorine? How much is actually in there, as well as any other biologics? You do the diagnostics. Then you have the discussion with Affordable Water. What would I like the water to be like, perform like, across those variables? And then install equipment that does specifically those things. And that reminder is hardness can only be solved with an ion exchange. The ion exchange through that medium means salt. If you don't want
test
any sodium,
in, test out.
There you go. Test in, test out. If you have issues either mentally or physically that you want no sodium induced, then you go with a salt that does not contain sodium. So salt is life. Yeah, you know, since the dawn of time, man has said things like, he's not worth his salt.
Right.
Salt of the earth.
Right.
Salt is good.
Civilizations have been built on the quest for salt.
At my home, in our dining table, yes, we have 8 different types of salt.
8 different types.
Yeah, because different salts contain different minerals and different flavors.
Right.
So I'm always varying my salt.
Right.
So I've got more.
Do you got any salt from that lake in Africa or that dried out lake where they salt mine and they bring cut out chunks of that lake? And
not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got black salt from Hawaii. I've got Himalayan salt. Got some salt from someplace in France that comes in flakes. I've got truffle infused salt. So when I hear people worried about salt, I'm like, your opinion's not worth a salt.
Yes. Yeah, it's like the real McCoy.
But for great diagnostics.
You know where that real McCoy came from?
I do.
You do? He was a runner called McCoy. Running booze back and forth, yeah.
So, affordablewaterjacks.com. They all the right credentials, all the right answers, and diagnostics, not sales. That's what you need. Know them, like them, trust them.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
Well, no, not much about the real McCoy, but that's about it, you know. But the olive trees, you know, I was looking at some beautiful olive trees. The olive trees were thriving during the middle of the drought. And, you know, people are always looking for trees where they could plant a tree and grow grass underneath it. You know, the sycamore is one. You know, there's several. An oak tree would be the willow oak. It could easily grow grass. The live oak is definitely not one you could grow. You know, you can somewhat, but it's not one of the easier ones to grow grass underneath. But the olive tree, no matter what size it gets, it's going to be very easy. And then some of the olive trees that are getting up in size now, since it has become more popular for olive trees about the last 15, 20 years, you know, some of them are getting pretty good size.
Yeah.
And the grass looks completely healthy underneath. It creates that filtered light. And then the olive tree roots are not really that problematic, because I don't remember in California, being from California, they plant them on the roadways along sidewalks.
Sure.
But they're not going to lift
concrete, you know, so, you know, planting them closer to the house where you don't have to, you don't want to shade that window. You know, those southern facing windows is a great thing. But they also, you can plant olives as a shrub border. You know, if you get this olive tree, or it comes in a dwarf, and it comes, the dwarf is called Little Ollie, and only gets around 4 to 5 feet tall. Hmm. Adapts pruning, slow growing.
In our area, though, not fruiting for the most part. Olives,
yeah, they're fruiting.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of fruiting olive trees.
I didn't realize
in our area, but they're kind of messy. I mean, people get excited about olive trees, but I prefer the sterile varieties.
I've got an olive oil guy.
Yeah.
His name's T.J. Robinson.
Right.
He's known as the olive oil hunter. I brought you olive oil.
Yeah.
And man, when you taste fresh.
There's a big difference.
Oh, my gracious.
It's one of the most adulterated cooking items you can
get. Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, it's...
Bertolli and that other stuff, that's...
They add chemical to press it out. And,
formaldehyde, and they use heat, they use formaldehyde and other chemicals. Not picking specifically on Bertolli, but that's an example of a bulk olive oil that no self-respecting Spaniard or no self-respecting Italian would ever consume.
Yeah, so send it to those Americans over there. They don't know the difference.
T.J. Robinson, and the olive oil hunter, look him up. He travels all over the world and follows the seasons.
Yes.
So we get stuff from Chile, stuff from Australia. So it's never more than 90 days from the time it's picked till the time we consume it. Sometimes it's even less than that.
Well, you can even grow and harvest your own. You can even process your own.
Processing olives to make oil is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
That's not for the light hearted. It's way easier to make beer or wine than pressure and olive oil.
But olive trees thrive here, and actually it's going to be, I believe it's going to be an upcoming crop that they're going to be growing in our state. As a, you know, produce crop or a cash crop. You know.
I have read about that, and
they're attempting to do it.
Yeah, somewhere there's one invent. Well, let me get this right. I've been looking into this. I wanted to visit one of the farms, but there's actually a website called Florida Olive Oil, and it is a co-op, essentially, of small farms around Florida who are attempting to bring that as a cash crop to Florida.
Right.
Very niche at this point. Just like out on toward the panhandle, there's a cheese place out there.
Right.
Where a cheese farm. Our climate just doesn't support great cheese.
Yeah. Because
they're trying.
Age properly.
It's tough to age.
Right.
Tough to age.
Yeah. But that's one of the crops they are working on, you know, getting to go here.
Well, I'm enthused about that.
You compete with California. You know,
that's going to be a challenge.
The citrus, you know, thing is a big deal. You know, California, Texas, and are the big two.
I'm a fan of that. You know, there's a place over on Edgewood called, I think it's called the Greater Good. It's a cheese store that's right next. There's a cigar store, a cheese store, and a wine store, all right there on Edgewood and Mary Hill. I'm gonna check with her and see if she's got any Florida olive oils. It's 7:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Right back to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:55 here at News 104.5. Grateful that you've been with us. We enjoy you, enjoy sharing thoughts with you and getting your calls. It's a beautiful thing. Let's go check in with Jim, see if we can figure out why his iris plants are turning brown. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
What kind of iris are they, Jim?
They're Bougainvillea, I believe is what the name of them is. And, you know, the ones that they shoot up into a stalk like a firework with the blue flowers.
Oh, yeah, Bougainvillea. I think they're Regina. Regina Nemocaria iris is what it is. It's an iris. We're talking about an iris, right?
Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's Nemocaria is in the iris family, and they have a blue flower. Really, are they really tall, around 2.5 feet tall?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And well, what normally what happens is, you know, when plants produce flowers, there's two different things, you know, like Louisiana iris, they'll go dormant. And they don't go dormant completely, but they kind of go semi-dormant. And then also, when a plant produces flowers, it puts a lot of drain on their system, so they get kind of tired, so to speak. And by cutting off the dead flower immediately after it dies, the plant will save energy and it will not go into that little stressful period after trying to, what it's doing is trying to make seed, you know, so it's deleting all of its energy and putting all of its energy into seed production. And also some irises will go dormant after they flower. So you can put a little bit of fertilizer on them during the period they are blooming and then immediately cut the flower off when they start to go into decline. The flower is no good anymore. Cut it off, and that will save them from going yellow. And continue to water them. All right?
Sounds good, yeah, because I definitely didn't cut it off.
It is somewhat ornamental, but it does, you know, seed production is a very difficult process for plants. You know, you're creating all this seed material. It's a lot of resources are necessary for that. So the plant will use everything it can to produce that seed. And, you know, using its own tissue, the moisture, all these other things in production of that. All right?
All right. Thanks for the info. I appreciate it.
All right.
Good luck with it. All right. Over to St. Nicholas. Let's see. Scott's got fuzzy green caterpillars eating his hibiscus. Scott, we got about a minute. What's up with that?
Yeah, good morning. Scott. We have one hibiscus, and they're just having a field day with it. We'd like to know how to get rid of them.
They're pretty easy. You can go to Home Depot or Lowe's or local garden center and get some, insecticidal soap. You know, it's very easy if you wanted to go the organic route. But caterpillars are easy on contact kill.
Get a chicken.
You don't want to use melathion on them, though, because they'll cause them to drop their leaves. You know, don't use that. But any insecticide will work on it. Any, pretty much. They're very easy to kill. Or insecticidal soap. Or you can mix up some soap yourself, the dishwashing soap, and spray them. And what that does, the soap is, suffocates them.
Makes them blow bubbles.
Suffocates them. They have a little, I think they're vacuoles on the side of their other, their body where they breathe through, and you get the soap in there and they can't breathe. All right?
Thank you very much.
Every 7 to 10 days. All right.
It's 7:59 again. Grateful that you've been with us. If you need Larry during the week, larrysgarden.com. Me, gohomepro.com. Have a beautiful day and use your
turn signal.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.